I'm not going to preach to you. I want to talk to you from my heart for a few minutes. So everybody find a seat. I want you to open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. No standing around talking. Sit down. Find a seat. Everybody. Young man back in the corner, back here, find a seat. Everybody, find a seat. Everybody. 1 Samuel chapter 20. As did other T. Look at verse number 27. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, Wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meet, neither yesterday nor today? Everybody sit up straight. Look right this way. Close your Bibles if you want to. Look right this way. I believe I've earned the right to ask you to listen to me for a few minutes. Let me sort of show you what I'm talking about. How many of you in full-time Christian service, you pastors, assistant pastors, so forth, how many of you at one time were my young'uns? I mean, I pastored you one time. Would you stand, please? All of you in full-time Christian service, I pastored you one time. My preacher boys, my full-time Christian workers. Now, while they're standing, I want all of you who go to the church where they lead, you came with these folks. Would you stand, please? Don't you see what I'm saying?
Amen.
You can be seated, please. Nobody moving around now. Listen carefully. About 4 o'clock this afternoon, you'll leave to go to the buses, and you'll be on your way home. I'm not lying to you. I'm telling you the God's truth. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, while you're on your way home, and at 5 and 6, I'll be in my study trying to figure out how to pay for this conference. What did the fireworks cost last night? $4,000 just for the fireworks last night. We don't have money to pay for that. This conference is in nobody's budget. We don't charge you one penny, and we're not taking one offering all week long. I'll be at my desk, and I'll be trying to figure out how to raise, listen to this, over $55,000. We don't have it in our church budget or in our bank account. We don't have it in our college or in our college account. We don't have it. I'm trying to say that I think I've earned the right for you to listen to me about 30 minutes right now. And I want you to give me your rapt attention. I'm going to be serious with you. I'm not going to cut up with you. In a college class, I'd just been discharged a few months before from the paratroopers after World War II was over. I went to East Texas Baptist College, and in a college class, walking through the door and toward my seat, I slipped on something, almost fell. Looked down, it was a piece of paper. In fact, it was a paper. I picked it up, and up on the top of it, it had the words, the sword of the Lord. I took it to my seat, and the Bible teacher was about as boring as some of the teachers where you're going to go to college. And I thumbed through that paper, and I became a follower of a man I had never seen. His name was John R. Rice. He came to my life I used to sit where you sit today and look up at him when he spoke. I used to drive 100 miles if I could just to get to have him sign my Bible or have him or hear him preach. I sat on the front row like you young men are this morning and looked up at him. He was my hero and became the best, the man who's the best friend I ever had. I saw him for the first time at a meeting at the Gaston Avenue Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. I'll never forget how I felt when I first saw him. I heard him preach for the first time at the Galilean Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. And then years later, I was pastoring myself. And one of our members was related to one of the Sword of the Lord workers. And they said, "Brother Hiles, Brother John R. Rice is in town. Would you and Mrs. Hiles, ushers back in the back, please be seated. Would you and Mrs. Hiles have dinner with us one evening? Look at me, kids." And one Friday night, I got to meet personally Dr. John Rice. I shared a meal, same table with him. Wasn't long after that till I had him preach in my church. Some of you guys are begging me to come to preach for you. And I'm booked sometimes and I can't come. And some of our preacher boys, when Brother Hiles finally does come, they often stand and say, "This is the greatest honor of my life." That's the way I felt when Dr. Rice stood behind my pulpit at the Miller Road Baptist Church of Garland, Texas, and preached for me. He asked me, to my surprise, to come and preach at a Sword of the Lord conference, July 1956. And for some reason or other, his soul was knitted to mine. I'll never forget the day. I said, "Dr. Rice, my daddy was a drunkard. My daddy's gone. He's been dead for years. I'm not asking you to show me any special favors. And I promise you, as long as you live, I won't tell anybody about it. But could you and I have a little secret pact? That I'm your adopted son." And we made an agreement that day. For 22 years, I never missed a Father's Day. Never did. Never missed his birthday. He was my hero. And together, we preached. Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Fresno, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Albuquerque, Denver, Salt Lake City, Boise, Billings, Minneapolis, Des Moines, Sioux City, Omaha, Wichita, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Dallas, Fort Worth, El Paso, Houston, Shreveport, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Memphis, Indianapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, Birmingham. Hush, hush! I'm talking to you seriously. Atlanta, Birmingham, Pensacola, Tallahassee, Miami, Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, Orlando, Tampa, and I could go on. Tokyo, Jamaica, Bahamas, and I could go on and on. Look right at me. He filled an important seat in my life, Dr. John R. Rice. There's another man that very dear to me when I was young. Probably the second. In fact, I was asked to, by some publication, to give the five greatest men of my generation, in every word, in every sense, the word greatness. And I gave these men: Douglas MacArthur, Winston Churchill, J. Edgar Hoover, John R. Rice, and Bob Jones Sr. He came into my life. He preached for me often in my church in Texas. He came to Hammond in the first few months I was here, first few years I was here, and preached for me here. He loved me. His soul was knitted to mine. Within 28 hours after I first shook his hand and he first met me, he put me on the board at Bob Jones University and put me on the Bible conference program at Bob Jones University. We shared pulpits together across America. Right here in this very area, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., Dr. John Rice, and I. You see, you have your heroes. I had mine. I haven't always been 64. I used to be where you are. And let me tell you this. It won't be long till you're where I am. It won't be long. I called this next man every Monday morning when he and I were young preachers. Every Monday, he was 10 years older than I, but every Monday we called each other and talked about the day on Sunday. I remember the day we sat on a curb in Corpus Christi, Texas, and Brother Lester Roloff and I sat together and talked about life and talked about death and talked about our lives and what we were going to do for God. Brother Roloff's one of the best friends I ever had. One of the closest friends I ever had was Lester Roloff. All of America, we shared pulpits. One of the two or three greatest Christians I ever met in my life was Brother Roloff. Another man that influenced my life greatly was a man named Dr. G.B. Vick. Dr. Vick was pastor of the largest church in the world when I was a boy. Dr. Vick was pastor of the Temple Baptist Church in Detroit, Michigan. I preached for him several times, many times, in what was then the largest church in the world. Dr. Vick was not only pastor of the great Temple Baptist Church in Detroit, but he was also at that time president of the Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, and he had to come through here often. He'd stop in the church here and see me for a while. I recall one day I took him down here to a men's store and bought him a suit one day, and Dr. Vick and I were close personal friends for 30 consecutive years. I preached. In fact, I think it's 31 consecutive years. I preached at the Bill Rice Ranch outside of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Because the founder of that ranch, Dr. Bill Rice, was my dear friend. These men were my heroes. And then I began to preach with them. All of these men are his pages in religious history to you. But that's my crowd. We together, these men together, tried to do what we can to make it easier for you. You sit here today and you may criticize me, or may even yawn, but you don't understand. You're here because of these men. That's why you're here. And together, John Rice, Bob Jones Sr., Lester Roloff, G.B. Vick, Bill Rice, and a young man who came on the scene whose name was Jack Hiles. When I was in my 20s, I was sharing pulpits with these men. When I was in my 20s, I was on my knees in motel rooms with these men, begging God to give you a chance. You weren't born then, most of you. Many of you, if you were just little kids. I've been on motel rooms with every one of these men. Bill Rice, G.B. Vick, Lester Olof, Bob Jones Sr., John R. Rice. And I as a young preacher, and these men older than I, Dr. Bob much, much older than I, traveled this country. I know the airports in this country better than I know the streets in my hometown. I have not had one day off for 23 years. Not a vacation for 23 years. You say, why? Because of you. I'm not kidding. While you played, I've worked. And I love to play. Nobody enjoys fun any more than I do. But this is why. We felt you had a chance. You deserved to have a chance. You listen to me carefully. 90% of the people in this room today wouldn't have had a pastor hadn't been for these men. And you owe a debt you will never understand and never think to pay for these men. One day I got a call. Put your hand up there. Sit up. One day I got a call. Said my good friend Dr. John Rice had a heart attack and maybe a stroke. After 22 years of traveling together, over 2,200 times of sitting on the same platform with him, he couldn't preach with me. I'll never forget that first time I preached without him in a place where we usually preach. It was in Louisville, Kentucky, Beth Haven Baptist Church. I never felt so lonely in my life. He got worse, wilted away, but one day he called me after a couple of years. And he said, Brother Jack, let's try one more time for old time's sake to have a Sword of the Lord conference. I said, Doc, you just tell me when and where and I'll be there. He said, let's go to John Powell's church in Wadsworth, Ohio, and let you and I have a one last Sword conference at least. I'll never forget that Tuesday night. One of the darkest nights of my life. I preached first. And I sat over here. And he preached last. But his sermon didn't make sense. And please don't laugh at this. My friend of years lost control of his bodily functions while he was preaching. And embarrassed himself in front of 800-900 people. I stood over there and cried like a baby, and everybody that knew him loved and cried. I knew this was the last time, and hey kids, the last times do come. They do come. When he finished preaching, he gave an invitation for something else. He preached one sermon, gave another invitation. He was incoherent. After he finished, they rushed him to his room. When I left the church, I went to his room, and his room was right next to mine, Knight's Inn, Wadsworth, Ohio. I knocked on the door. Mrs. Rice came to the door, and sitting over here on my left was my friend, Dr. John Rice. I walked over, and I said, Dr. Rice, how do you feel? He said, who are you? Who are you? I said, Dr. Rice, you know me. I'm your best friend. We preach together all across America. He said, don't think we've met. Who are you? just a few weeks later, 2 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. And the words came. He was gone. The seat was empty. Dr. Bob Jones, Sr., came to our church to preach about 1960, 61, somewhere there, here at Hammond. He's getting up in years. Dr. Jones, Sr. stood. He used the same illustration 9 times in the same sermon. Same illustration, told the same story. 9 times, and I knew this was it. He went back home. They put him in a little room in the clinic there, the university. And he wilted away. Went down and down, and one day he called for me. And I took my daughter, Becky, who loved him so dearly. Becky and I flew down to Greensboro, went back to that little room, and the old soldier was sitting there alone. No great crowds to hear him preach. No aisles filled with sinners. No altars filled with converts. No applause after he was introduced. As I walked in that room, I felt like I could hear the marching feet of an army. An army of people he'd won to Christ. An army of soldiers he'd trained. Carry on. I said, Dr. Bob, would you pray for me? I knelt like a little child would kneel at a mother's knee. And the great Dr. Bob Jones, Sr. placed his hands on my head. And I'm quoting, I think, word for word what he said. Dear God, let a portion of what you've given me fall on Brother Hyde. Wasn't long after that, somebody called and said, Dr. Bob Jones, Sr. was gone. His seat is empty. I was in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, preaching. I called the office at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Rose O'Brien, one of our secretaries, said, Brother Hiles, have you heard? And I said, heard about what? She said, have you heard that Brother Roloff, something happened? I said, he's dead, isn't he? She said, yes, he is. He was killed in a plane crash. By the way, kids, just about the age I am now. Just about the age I am now. I put my head in my hands. I felt mighty lonely. My crowd, those that I looked to, those that I could call on the phone if I had a burden, a problem, passing off the scene one at a time. I put my head in my hands and I said, Brother Olaf is gone. His seat is empty. That man stood behind this pulpit time and time. This very pulpit, the very place where I stand, that man stood. That man stood behind this very pulpit. Mr. Olaf, that man stood behind this pulpit again and again and again. Every time one of them was taken, I got on my knees and said, I'll try to take his place. As best I can, I'll try to take his place. I was in Michigan preaching. Dr. G.B. Vick, the great pastor of the
Temple Baptist Church and I were sharing the pulpit. He preached on heaven that night before I preached. I never heard him preach like that. Dr. Vick was a great man, but an average preacher. But he was way above average that night because he preached on heaven like I've never heard heaven preached on. I did not know he was tiptoeing, getting a look at it, and telling me what he saw. As he walked up, I walked up the steps, and he walked down the steps, and I had to preach. I said, "Dr. Vick, I've never heard you preach like you preached tonight. That's the greatest sermon I ever heard you preach." That was on Friday night. Just a few days. I think it was the next Monday, but I'm not sure. But just a few days, I was in Rock City, Wyoming. Rock Springs, Wyoming. Phone rang in my room. My secretary said, "We just got word that Dr. G.B. Vick suddenly died with a heart attack. Oh, by the way, he was just a few years, very few years older than I am right now." And I realized Dr. Vick was gone. One by one, my Jack Hiles is passing off the scene. One by one, my Eddie Lapinas passing off the scene. One by one, my heroes, their seats are empty. I said, "I'll do what I can." Let me tell you something very interesting. The conferences Dr. Rice carried on for years, I'm carrying on. The type school that was in Greenville at the time that this man had, I now have. And the fellowship of the rock rib fundamental preachers in America, I'm not talking about the neo-evangelicals or the liars who say they're fundamentalists and they're not. Not talking about them. I mean, they follow me today. This man had the largest church in America. I told you. I tried to take their places. His. I was preaching in the mountains of Colorado. Summertime, and it was cold in the mountains. 8,000 feet above sea level. I finished preaching that night and someone rushed up to me and they said, "There's a long distance telephone call." I said, "Where's the phone?" They said, "There's not a phone anywhere except way out in the mountains. There's one pay phone way out in the mountains, about a 5-mile drive." I said, "Get somebody to take me there." They took me. And out in the mountains, a little payphone booth, I returned the call. And young Pete Rice said, "Dr. Hiles, Daddy, Dr. Bill Rice, just had a massive stroke. We don't know if he's going to live." He lasted a while. Hobbled around on a cane. You couldn't understand what he was saying. And then one day they called me. And they said, "Dr. Bill took a nap. And then he woke up beside the bed. He looked at his wife and said, 'It's finished. It's finished.' And Dr. Bill was gone." I did the best. Turn this mic on, please. Turn it up, please. I did the best I could. Got a whistle now. I did the best I could to fill his seat. I travel when I don't feel like traveling, just like he did. I'm conducting conferences all across America. just like he did. I'm trying to help a generation of preachers to grow up in America just like he did. I've tried awful hard to fill his seat. So often they tell me that Hal Anderson College reminds them so much of what Dr. Bob Jones built years ago, like it used to be.
I love the old man. He loves me. I've tried real hard to build a kind of college that fill his seat. Here was the champion of the King James Bible right here. I can hear him now saying, "Brother Jack, he fought for the King James Bible. Somebody with a national name had to fill his seat. So I decided to stick my neck out, let everybody know that I'm for the King James Bible and no other Bible. Wouldn't give you a dime for the RSV, ASV, New King James, New Scofield, Amplified, Moffitt's, Goodspeed, Living Bible, Living Letters. You can have them all. Just give me the King James Bible." I've tried to fill his seat. I sort of figured, somebody but I had a desire for somebody to fill the seat of old Dr. Bill. You know why? Dr. Bill was funny. Dr. Bill loved life. And Dr. Bill made me laugh more than anybody that ever lived, the most charming personality I've ever known. And I decided that I was going to do what I could to bring back fundamentalism like John R. Rice did, build a school like Bob Jones did, take my stand for the old King James Bible like Lester Roloff did, build a great church like G.B. Vick did, and I also decided I was going to try to give fundamentalists some of the joy of laughter again. And then there was my seat. It's the only one filled. Others are empty. Oh, by the way, Dr. Bill went about the age I am now. Brother Vic went just 3 or 4 years older than I am now. Brother Olav went just about the same age I am now. May I confess something to you? One of the hardest things I face is seeing those kids sing and wonder if I'll be here when their kids are grown, are growing. One of the hardest things I face is wondering how many years I'll have at youth conference again. One of our young men grew up in our ministry here. Graduated from our school, I think he did. He went to the school anyway, the high school. He went into sin, covered America, wrecked his life. And by the way, kids, the devil's a liar. The devil's a liar. Nobody ever went into sin and came back happy. This young man told me he'd done everything that a man can do. He said, He said, I doubt seriously. If there is a sin, I haven't committed. He went down and down, lived on a motorcycle most of his life. Name was Todd Moffett. Todd Moffett was in St. Louis, Missouri, in a tavern at the end of the trail, and you will come to the end of the trail. Enjoy your sin now. It's going to be awful bitter, the aftertaste. He put his head on a bar in St. Louis, Missouri, and Todd Moffett said, after he had tried everything he always thought he wanted to try, he said, I wonder if anybody in the world loves me. And he said, immediately, I saw Brother Hiles' face. And I said, yes, there's somebody who loves me. Brother Hiles loves me. He got on his motorcycle, came back to Hammond late one night. I was walking out of the office after counseling. I looked up and I saw a man. I'd never seen anybody quite as disheveled in my life. He said, Brother Hiles. I said, yes, sir. May I help you? He said, don't you know me? And I said, no, sir. I don't know you. He said, I'm Todd Moffett. I said, Todd, come on in. He got right with God. I bought him a helmet for his motorcycle. I bought him a suit of clothes and a tie and shoes, white shirt. I got him a haircut, got him shaved cleanly. He sat right there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. But folks wouldn't accept him. Nobody that heard did what Dr. Boyd said a while ago. One day, he took a gun on his back porch, blew his brains out. One of my boys grew up here, sat in these pews. A few days later, there was a little ad in the classified section of the paper. Said, thanks to Dr. Jack Hiles from Todd Moffett. Dr. Hiles is a real friend. Here's what I'm saying. When Todd came to my office that night, it was on a Thursday or Friday night one, and I always counsel on Thursdays and Friday nights when I'm home. And here's what Todd said. He said, I knew you'd be there. Brother Hiles, I knew you'd be there. And I was. My seat was filled. But I'm not young. It's not easy for me to get up in the morning. I'm the age he was, and nearly what he was. What he was. And the truth is, one of these days, my seat's going to be empty. You're going to come to youth conference one year. I hope it's not soon. But I hope it wasn't soon for these fellas. Ask a question. Who's going to take my place? Who's going to fill my seat when it's empty? That's why I'm up here. I've lived my life. I have no more places I care to preach. There's not a great fundamental church in the world, this generation or the last generation, which I haven't preached. There's not any kind of a fundamental convention where I haven't preached. You ask this man, or any man who works with me or this lady, or any lady who works with me, you ask them what Brother House lives for. I live for these kids over here. And then these kids here. But here's what worries me. Who's going to take my place? When John Rice's seat was empty, I said, I'll try to fill it. Bob Jones Sr.'s seat was empty, I said, I'll help fill it. Lester Olof's seat was empty, I said, I'll help fill it. G.B. Vick's seat was empty, I said, I'll help fill it. Bill Rice's seat was empty, I said, I'll help fill it. But I can't help fill mine when it's empty. I'm talking right now to every young man in this room, every man in this room. Not for my sake. Too late for that. For yours. It's your country. It's your generation. It's your children. It's your freedom. It's your right to go soul winning. It's your right to go to a fundamental church. It's your right to be free. And I want to say this. These men right here, John R. Rice, Bob Jones Sr., Lester Olof, G.B. Vick, Bill Rice, did more to save this country than Mr. Schwarzkopf will ever do. And more to save this country than Harriet Truman and Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Mr. Bush, Mr. Reagan, all of them. What saves the country is preaching. What saves the country is the Bible. What saves the country is great churches. So I'm coming with an appeal. Will you help fill my seat? Young men, all men, will you help fill my seat? I'm talking about preaching. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about being an agricultural missionary. I'm talking about preaching. Now, somebody's got to do it. If it's done, it'll be done with the people in this room. I think I'll be here next year. I think I'll walk out here and sit right there. But I thought Brother Olof would be with me too when I had him scheduled to come. But he never came. I thought Dr. Bill Rice would be at the ranch when I went there the next year to preach. I thought Dr. Vick would be able to come to pastor school the next year where I'd invited him to speak and where he did speak before. In fact, all of these men, except Dr. Jones who died earlier, all these men have preached at pastor school. I'm asking this morning, man to man, I'm asking you guys to light a match to your dreams. I'm asking you guys, strike a match to your hopes, selfish plans. And I'm asking, and by the way, if they don't come from this room, they won't come. I mean, they're going to come from here, or they won't come from anywhere. I want all the males in the house to stand, please. All the males in the house to stand.